Greetings and hi, not necessarily in that order. It's a real pleasure. I love this place. I've said that before. Every time I come down, which isn't near often enough, but this is such a great hall. The chairs don't go back very far, so everybody's up close. You feel like, you know, it's just chatting with the family, you know, which is a great pleasure. There's a lot going on in the world right now, and some of it is pretty scary. I talked with a brother up in the Redlands church area. Of course, they were right there when the shooting took place, and he mentioned to me that he took that Sabbath that followed that. He didn't go to church. He went up to a place in the mountains just to get away and meditate, because he was close enough to the action there that it really shook him up. And I imagine that maybe several of our brethren up in the Redlands area have felt this way. Now, we have God. We know we're okay. We know we're taken care of. That's not the point. But when this stuff happens right around you, we've had it good for so long. You know, this nation just hasn't had anything. Even during World War II, there was, you know, one or two incidents along the California coast that I know of. I think something out on the Atlantic. Hello? Am I not close enough to the microphone? Okay. Any rate, it's a new thing that is going on in God's nation of Israel. I'm talking about the U.S., and, of course, things are getting bad in Israel. If you think about it, Israel was out of the land for hundreds of years. Hundreds and hundreds of years. No nation has come back to their land except for the nation of Israel in 1948. They were reestablished as a nation. They came back to their homeland. Why? I don't know if you saw the Beyond Today program this week, but it was about the Middle East, and they commented there. Israel has to be in the land for the Messiah to return, because the prophecies are that he comes to his people in Judah, in and around Jerusalem. Well, they can't last much longer. Now, this doesn't... When you hear the message, it doesn't really sound like it's going to fit, but I think if we look at the world in which we live, you and me, right here, and our relationship to one another, how important it is that we solidify that relationship. We can't just be a group of people that come to church on the weekend. Use that term to include all of the people who do come to church on their particular, whether it's Saturday or Sunday, they come to church. We don't come to church. We bring the church here. We are the church, and that's extremely important. So I'd like to, that was just by, you know, I'm introducing myself to you, what's on my mind, but I'd like to start the message by saying to you here in the San Diego congregation that I love you. I really do. Many of you have been close friends for a long time. Many of you I haven't met yet, and I hope I will. But I love you. You know, Christ said, "By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love one for another." And what we're doing here in this group is becoming like God. That's what it's all about, is that we become like God. If you'll turn to John 3. And verse 14. Which is just two two verses before the well-known verse 16, John 3, verse 14, and I'm going to read through 17. But even as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, even so must the Son of Man be lifted up. So Moses acted out a prophecy of the crucifixion of Christ. There in the wilderness. So that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Verse 16, for God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whosoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world. He did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but so that the world might be saved through him. The first words of verse 16, for God so loved the world. Now the church is the body of Christ. And it says, but so that the world might be saved through him. It's not just us. We're here for purpose. We're here in a group for purpose. It's not just to save us. God didn't call us to save us. He called us to spend us. And he's got a great reward for that for us. But that's not our plan or our purpose. Our purpose is to become like Jesus Christ, to become like God in that kind of love that he has. We know that God is love. Matthew 22. And verse 36, this person came to Christ, and there's a lot of discussion and controversy about what his attitude was and who he was and why he did what he did, but I'm not looking at that. I'm looking at what Christ said. Master, which is the great commandment of the law? Now, let's see. If I was to ask you or if somebody was to ask me, which is the great commandment of the law? Well, maybe have no other gods before me. Maybe remember the Sabbath, because the Sabbath is the key to our relationship with God. We meet him here on the Sabbath day. Or, Jesus didn't use any of the Ten Commandments. He said, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul, with all your mind. This is the first great commandment. And then Jesus always liked to give a little more than he was asked for. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. Now these two commandments come out of the law, Deuteronomy and Leviticus. You can look them up. But Christ didn't just make these up. These are out of the law. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Now, I don't know if you remember seeing or ever had anybody talk about it, but you know, this chart of God's law where you have a box at the top of the page that says love. And then you got a line coming down and it splits off to two boxes. Love God, love your neighbor. And then down from there it has from the Ten Commandments, the commandments about loving God, and the commandments about loving your neighbor. This chart. Well, the topmost point in that chart is love. That's the commandment of God. Now, we've got to go back in history to see how this all began. Back in the Garden of Eden, Genesis 6. In verse 14, God's talking to Noah, and he says, make an ark of cypress timbers. Different translations use different woods, but basically just, you know, some type of really good wood. They're not too sure of the actual translation. But make an ark of really good wood, and you shall make rooms in the ark, and you shall pitch it inside and outside with pitch. Well, the word pitch there is a verb, to pitch. In the Hebrew, the word is kofar, which means to cover. And the translators looked at cover it with what? With pitch. And so they said to pitch it with pitch. But the word actually means it's one of the roots for the word cover. It can also mean to condone, to placate, to appease, to atone, to forgive, to be merciful, to pacify, to pardon. Now, this word does not mean that in this context. That's not the point. He's saying that this word, as most words do, has many possible meanings. You have to read the context, and here it meant to cover it inside and out with pitch. But the term cover is important, and we can go to Leviticus 23. And verse 27, and it says there also on the 10th of the 7th month, this is a day of atonement. It shall be a holy convocation. You shall afflict your souls. But the word atonement there, and remember the day pictures to us, to those of us here at the end times, the day pictures the return of Christ. And there's also some sacrifices in there that remind us on that day that Christ was sacrificed for us and that Satan the devil has to be put away. Those are the two things we got out of it. I'm sure you heard messages on that or have in the past. The point is here that atonement is a word, Kippur, you know, Yom Kippur, is from this root kafar, and it means to cover, such as covering debts, covering transgressions, covering sins. So we have this covering coming down to it from Genesis, and to the holy day, which teaches us about this covering sacrifice of Christ. Now, during this holy day, which has a very rich meaning for us, it's also, you know, this prophecy of the return of Christ. But if we go back to Genesis and take a look again at man in his beginnings, I once thought of this thing about you've got Adam and Eve. This is kind of a little metaphor or nightmare or something. Anyway, they're sitting at this big table, and the table is in front of, you've seen these movies where they have hearings in the Congress, you know, and they've got the person, the witness, sitting at the table, and then you've got all these congressmen or judges or something impaneled on this big thing. That's, you know, where I've seen them sitting there. And then behind them in the gallery is the rest of mankind. And they're asked to make a choice, because there's two beings up on the platform asking them, Christ said, you know, I formed you out of the dust of the ground. I walked with you. I taught you. And the other being there says, yeah, but he was just teaching you for his own pleasure. He was lying to you. He said, you know, that, you know, if you eat of this tree over here, you're going to die. But no, that tree's going to give you freedom of choice. You want freedom of choice. And they're expected to make the decision, and the whole humanity is behind them. They're making the decision for all of humanity. And that's kind of what happened there in the garden. Because they chose to choose for themselves what's right and wrong instead of listening to God. So, and you know, here we are with the results. It has gone from bad to worse. So, At any rate, in Genesis 3, verse 21, stay on track here. And for Adam and his wife, the eternal God made coats of skins and clothed them. What did he do? He covered them. And he had to sacrifice animals, the shedding of blood, in order to cover them. He could have made coats out of leaves or bark, but he made it out of animal skins. And animals had to die to get those skins. And he covered them with these. So again, there is a symbolic covering for Adam and Eve. And I'm not making any judgments as to where they stand with God. That's, you know, between God and them, I don't know. But the point is that God still loved them. He didn't stop loving them because they sinned. And he covered them. So when Christ returns and Satan is bound, it says, "For the earth shall be full of the knowledge of the Lord, even as the waters cover the seas." That's from Isaiah 11:9 and Habakkuk 2:14. It's been a practice of mine when I, you know, in prayer, "Thy kingdom come," I refer to this. I ask God that day that when Christ returns, his truth, his way, his teachings will cover the earth as the waters cover the sea. And this concept of covering came through, and I stuck it in here for that purpose, because the knowledge of the Lord will cover the earth like the waters cover the seas. Coming down here, we came down from Orange County along the 5 there. You can look out and see where Mr. Miller likes to surf. My wife and I were talking about, we have a little lake up near our house, and when we drive down this one road, it goes by this lake. It's a reservoir and a recreational place for the people there. And we always say, "Oh, there's the lake," you know, just because it's a pretty change in scenery from all the just houses every place else. But so we're driving down there. My wife says, "Oh, the lake." Yeah, so, and, you know, it extends all the way to, well, you went to swim. You could swim and you could rest up in Hawaii and then go all the way to China. Yeah, so and Japan. So at any rate, so again, we think God so loved the world, and he's going to cover the earth with his teaching, with his way. Now, I want to go to 1 Corinthians, because this is what tied it all together. I was listening to the radio in the car one day, and this guy on the radio mentioned what the world needs now is love. You remember back in the 60s? No, most of you don't. A few of you do. All right. But I'm sure everybody's heard the term hippies. There was a song back in the 60s that said, when you come to San Francisco, be sure you wear flowers in your hair. These were young people, pretty much like the young people of today, who want peace, who wanted happiness, who wanted to bring joy to the earth. There's this constant joke in these beauty contests, where they ask the beauty contestant, you know, "What do you want?" "Well, I want to do something really good in the world, maybe become a doctor, and I would like to bring world peace." Yeah, and you've seen that in movies, joked about. If you watched those shows, and especially back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, that was constantly talked about. I want world peace. And there are people going out there in the world today doing really stupid things, trying to bring about world peace. Oh, if we can just convince these bad people that we love them, then they won't be bad people anymore. And they go in and they do, you know, and God bless them. They go into these areas to perform medical service to people that are in these terrible situations, and somebody comes along and kills them for it. And kills the people that they're trying to help. You know, all the efforts that they make cannot bring world peace. Peace, peace, but there is no peace. Without God's way, there can be no peace in the world. But what about right here in San Diego? In this gathering right here. Do we have peace? I think so, for the most part. I mean, you know, hey, we're human. of course, I've never had an argument with a brother. But I think about those songs from that time. There was a lot of songs about peace and love, and these people came to San Francisco with their flowers and their little peace signs, and oh, we want peace. And then they messed it up because they were still human and they did not know God's way to peace, and so they got into drugs because that made them feel happy. The world didn't make them feel happy, so they tried drugs. That made them happy, and then they got into all kinds of other trouble and ended up in a disaster, and there was a song that came out about somebody left the cake out in the rain, and their whole thing kind of fell apart. Their whole peace movement fell apart. A lot of people still striving, but the world wants peace. But it doesn't know the way because they've been deceived by Satan. Anyway, this guy on the radio was talking about that, about the peace and all. By the way, he's a political commentator, not a religious person, but he brought this up that, you know, what the world needs is love. The world needs love. He could see that. Lots of people can see that. They just don't know how to get it. And then he read this verse from the Bible, and then he made a comment about it. Let me go ahead and read it to you. You can't have a message on love without reading 1 Corinthians 13, right? So let's go to 1 Corinthians 13. And I know where I'm going, so excuse me if I get a little choked up ahead of time. 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 through 8. Charity, which can be translated love, it's the agape, that Greek word agape, we've probably heard about that. It's the form of brotherly love. Mr. Armstrong used to refer to it as the way of give instead of the way of get. The world is all tied up in the way of get, and we've got to learn to get tied up in the way of give. But that's agape has to do with outgoing concern for others. There's other words for romance and things like that in the Greek. And so the translators in the King James translated this to charity because it's that type of love, the charity, the caring for others. But I'm going to go ahead and turn it back to love now that you know exactly what I mean by love. I'm talking about the charity kind of love. Love has patience, is kind. Love is not envious, is not vain, is not puffed up. Love does not behave indecently. Love does not seek her own way. Love is not easily provoked. Love thinks no evil. Love does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices in the truth. Love quietly covers all things. Love believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never fails. Well, what this guy on the radio said, I'm going to tell you who it was. Some of you are going to go, oh, really? Glenn Beck. Now, he's a fun guy, but some people agree with him, some people don't. As these radio commentators are all like that. But when he said this, I said to myself, wow, he's kind of touched on something really, really important here. And I went and I did it, and I said, that is tough. Now, I've been in the church a lot of years. Was it 47, 46, 48? And so, you know, I've learned everything I need to know. And I don't have any problems with this anymore. What Mr. Beck said was, put your name in there. Knut has patience. Well, sometimes. Knut is kind. I can be kind. Knut is not envious. Sure like that new car my neighbor got. Oh, here's an easy one. Knut is not vain. My wife's sitting over here. This is tough. God's sitting up there. This is really tough. I think I'm going to quit there, and I'll let you do the rest of it with your name. But it really does make you think when you put your name in there. So I hope that you'll do that. I hope you'll take this home. And you'll go through this verse point by point. And if you've been in the church a long time and you think you've come a long way, no, none of us thinks we're perfect. Well, actually, my wife thinks I'm perfect. She's shaking her head. But, well, I proved it to her. Mr. Weber... We all know Mr. Weber. We all love Mr. Weber. If he says something, you know, we can assume that it's probably true. He said nobody's perfect, right? Well, I'm nobody. Therefore, but quite frankly, and I think those of you have been in the church a while, and a while is probably anything over a couple of years. We start to feel pretty good about our Christianity. And I don't think that's a bad thing. I think we should know that we are working to please God and that most of our life does please God. And, you know, we are making progress in that area. We are becoming more like God. But every once in a while, something like this comes along and it gives us a second look. It did me. It really did me. Because I don't measure up nearly as well as I thought I did when I heard Glenn Beck say this. So it's an important concept. But let's finish up in John 13. John 13. And verse 35. Finish where I started. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love towards one another. I hope you got Mr. Weber's letter that he sent out. I think I got it yesterday in the email. And down second to the last paragraph, he says, all names and lives are important to God, and we realize we continue to have so many in our own circuit that God that need God's healing and also encouragement of visits. Friends from Las Vegas to the Mexican border. Another way of saying San Diego, right? We are all in this together as a spiritual family. Please continue to reach out to one another and most importantly, reach up to God in prayer and supplication for our fellow saints. We really need to love one another more. My wife and I have been through a series of incidents which have really brought this home, as we have learned. By the way, forgive me, I need to say this. My wife, this is her first day back to church after 3 months recovering from a fall. And so she was home. During that time, of course, was the feast. Now, my wife, one of her jobs at the feast is with the those cards that they put out, those big cards they put out, and everybody signs them and mails them off. She got one this year because she couldn't go to the feast. And it made us both realize how very important these cards are to the people who get them. And you, even though we were involved, well, she was involved. I helped set up the table. But she was involved in the making of them and getting them all ready and getting them there along with some other ladies. You don't realize how important they are until you're home alone and you can't go to the feast and you get one of these cards and you read the dozens of notes from people at the feast wishing you well. That's the love of the church for the people Mr. Weber was talking about. And sometimes it's so simple we don't even realize how important it is. It's these simple little things, a visit, a card. Maybe you know somebody who's going through a trial, having some difficulties, and you can be an encouragement. It doesn't take much. Because we in the Church of God know that what it's all about is the kingdom of God, not about the problems of this age. Those just come with the territory because we live here. But since nothing here should matter like the kingdom of God, when bad things happen, we can know that we can get through them, but sometimes it takes the encouragement of brethren to remind us, because when you're in a trial, when you're wounded and in a foxhole, and there's enemy fire coming in, encouragement from somebody really helps. And that's the love of God that needs to be shed abroad in our hearts, starting here at home, and then extending out as we have opportunity to all of God's children in the world. It's a pleasure being here with you. I look forward to seeing you after services. Good to meet you.